Happy New Year, everyone. In the matter of our first case of the year, of the decade, New Jersey Land Title Association versus Dana Roan. May we please have appearances of counsel.
Yes, good morning, Your Honor. Thomas M. Bachman from the Office of the Essex County Council, appearing on behalf of Petitioner, Essex County Register of Deeds and Mortgages, Miguel Rivera, Jr. Thank you.
Appearing for New Jersey Land Title Association.
Welcome, counsel.
Good morning, Justice. Robin Geigel, I'm from Gluck Walrath, on behalf of Amicus, Monmouth County, Atlantic County, Camden County, Cape May County, Middlesex County, Mercer County, Ocean County, and Passaic County.
And I have you as brief only.
Your Honor?
I have you as brief only, not for oral argument.
That's what I've been told, Your Honor.
Very good. Mr. Bachman, please go ahead.
Okay. May it please the Court. This case affords the Court the opportunity to rule on the validity of convenience fees charged by the Essex County Register and other county recording officers to offset the cost of providing an e-filing service which processes e-document filings, e-payment of filing fees, and e-receipts. Since May of 2017, recording officers have been required to accept electronic documents. They are also required to accept e-payments of recording fees and furnish e-receipts for them. Assessment of the convenience fee is based on the Government Electronic Payment Acceptance Act, or GEPA, under Title 40A and applicable regulations. This fee is neither a new one or an additional fee, either under the recording statutes, Title 46, or the statute listing fees and costs under Title 22A. In fact, no existing statute or regulation prohibits such a fee as long as it doesn't exceed handling and processing costs. Upholding the fee, which offsets processing charges for the electronic funds transfer system in place, will help to assure its fiscal viability to the benefit of both submitters in terms of convenience and expense, e-filing being less expensive than over-the-counter filing, and to the public. As background, in 2016, Essex County established an electronic funds transfer or ETF system for the Register's use pursuant to Title 40A. As pertains to the Register, an ETF system is one where recording fees are paid by electronic transaction between the submitter's bank and the Register's bank or a bank-to-bank transfer. And that's what we have here. As the Appellate Division observed, to provide e-filing the Register at a cost entered into a shared servicing agreement with Monmouth County to use a web-based document summary management system. To use it, the filer who needs to have an escrow or bank account so that the filing fee can be withdrawn as an ETF connects to the internet portal and sends a scanned copy for recording. As the trial court explained, an EFT between the submitter's bank and the county's bank is what triggers the $3 fee, and it creates the obligation. In other words, it, meaning the e-receipt transaction, just can't happen unless the portal is used. Title 40A-46 allows a Register to assess and collect service charges when ETF systems are used, notwithstanding the provisions of any other law to the contrary. A service charge is essentially one charge in excess of the obligation owed to offset processing charges incurred in using the ETF transfer system. Code provision 530-9 allows the Register to charge a fee to offset costs of e-receipt transactions, while Code Provision 153-9 allows the Register to collect fees from e-documents or packages in a manner compatible with its software, financial practices, and Code Provision 5:30-9. So we have cross-referencing between the regulations as well as between the statutes. The Appellate Division erroneously ruled the fee was not allowed under JEPA as a processing cost or presumably as a handling cost, and that the fees listed in Title 22A are the only ones authorized by the legislature that can be charged, despite the fact that statute does not address electronic filing. This decision has effectively closed the door to the recoupment of costs JEPA would otherwise allow, to the detriment of the budgets of recording officers. The appellate decision below calls for this court's intervention not only to address the validity of the fee at issue and harmonize the mosaic of provisions under the recording statutes and JEPA that has fueled the progress of this case to where we are today, but also in light of the impact The appellate court's restrictive interpretation of JEPA will have on the computation of convenience fees by other governmental entities going forward based not only on JEPA, but on related statutes such as Title 2B1 concerning e-payment systems for the courts. For these reasons, the court is urged to reverse the judgment below. However, in the alternative, should this court decide the fee is inconsistent with JEPA, we submit the register should be allowed to continue to collect it based on quantum merit. For the register has to defer to benefit on submitters by providing e-filing services, one of several options, and to deny recovery would be unjust, especially since up until February of 2019, there was no law prohibiting the convenience fee and a ruling by the law division allowing it. And it is also for this reason that we respectfully request that should this court uphold the fees and debt validation, the relief provided should be made to apply on a prospective basis only. Thank you.
I'd like to ask you a couple of questions relating to this certification by Sharon Doors.
Yes, Your Honor.
Paragraphs 21 and 22 in particular. In 21, you highlight various expenses for e-filing that appear to go beyond maintenance of the system and access to the portal. Do you have an estimated cost per transaction that relate to those services?
Your Honor, my understanding is that the, I believe the paper and toner is roughly, I think it's $27,000. I know that there was also overtime that was used for the e-filing. There was also a management contract, I believe a continuing contract of $10,000. I think there was an initial contract of $69,000. I know that there were significant other costs.
But the $3, according to paragraph 22, pay for access to the portal. These are the contract charges that you have with Monmouth, correct? That's what's asserted.
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that's roughly... I believe it's roughly $27,000 to $28,000 for the last year.
So the legislature has already empowered you to receive $2 as a fee for the upgrade and modernization of this system. Tell us specifically where the legislature has authorized additional monies that would relate to the operation and access to the system, which is what your $3 appears to be going toward.
Well, Your Honor, under the JEPA itself, under the regulations that accompany JEPA, under, I believe it's 530-9, the county, in authorizing the electronic transaction fee, also sets up a trust fund in which those monies have to be deposited in that trust fund and used. So it has its own, funding source. Apart from those in Title 46. So in other words, that is, I think, what the appellate division failed to appreciate, that pursuant to JEPA itself, this money is going into a dedicated trust fund, and that was also pursuant to the resolution of the Essex County Board of Chosen Freeholders that created this fee.
You're telling us where that money is going. My question is slightly different. What specifically authorizes you to get money for maintenance, for access to the portal? What are you relying on as the source of authority among the regulations or the statute to be able to get that money to begin with?
Oh, Your Honor, based on the we're allowed to charge for service charges, we're saying that use of the portal would be an allowable service charge and also an allowable processing charge, because service charges, the definition of service charge under the statute references processing charges, and we're saying that use of the portal is a processing charge because, again, we're talking about one transaction. It's not the filing of the document itself that triggers JEPA, but we're saying it is the fact that you're filing the document with the payment, and then you, as a result of that, because the submitter would have an account with the register. And so then as soon as they submit their document, you have a back-to-back transfer pursuant to the automatic ACH system. And so that money then would be debited from the submitter's bank, and it goes back to the register's bank. So it's the actual, in other words, This is what I explained to the trial court below, which the trial court did accept, which the appellate division rejected, is that it's not separate transactions. It's one transaction, and that's why we call it an electronic receipt-based transaction.
Is there a distinction to be drawn between upgrading and maintaining access to the portal and a processing charge?
Well, there are, as pointed out in the appellate division, there are other statutes that permit the regular fees to be used to upgrade or modernize the system, but that would be separate and apart from the convenience charge. So we're talking about separate sources of funding. In other words, it's not just one source of funding provided by Title 46. It's various forms of funding.
So that leads to a question I want to ask you, pivoting off Chief Justice. The convenience charge,
yes,
that you want us to bless, authorize, is for the upgrade and the maintenance of this e-system, the infrastructure, correct?
Partly, but also for the use of the portal system and the e-system, yes.
Now,
the filing service system.
Even brick-and-mortar buildings require maintenance and upgrading the building.
Yes.
Would you argue that if the Hall of Records had to be expanded, upgraded, or maintained, that you could charge a convenience fee above the $30?
It would be a different situation, because in that situation, the convenience fee would not be
I'm trying to figure out how you'd be able. You can't justify that type of funding, because there's nowhere in the statute for you to charge a convenience fee to upgrade the brick and mortar building, correct?
In terms of JEPA, I would agree.
Okay. But you want to charge a convenience fee for those people who are doing this e-filing.
Yes.
And that's creating a disparity. It seems that the people who are therefore e-filing are at a disadvantage from those people who would go into the building itself and have to file.
Well, technically, Your Honor, the converse is true, because the statute, Title 46, provides that if I go into the building to hand deliver a document for filing, I have to pay a $10 fee for a cover sheet. And if I don't have my cover sheet, then I have to pay a $20 fee. Conversely, if I simply e-file, the portal itself has the cover sheet, so I save either the cost of the $10 or the cost of the $20. So it's actually less expensive for the e-filer as opposed to the person who either hand delivers it or mails in the documents or sends in a courier, which are the other three options. In addition, they benefit from the convenience of submitting the fee from their own homes. They don't have to go pay for parking and other ancillary expenses or the cost of transportation.
Does this whole case come down to a single word in 40A546, obligations? What is the obligation? Is the obligation to pay the $30? Plus whatever credit card, bank fee, or is the obligation to not only do that, but pay for what you're now arguing is this sort of infrastructure maintenance of the e-system?
Your Honor, I'm glad you asked that question, because I think there is some confusion. The obligation itself would normally be the obligation of the filing fees at issue. But the reason that we're saying that the appellate division erred in saying that there could be no other fee is because the fact that the JEPA itself states that notwithstanding any other statute to the contrary, that these convenience fees can be charged. So I think that's the problem. I can see in terms of technically speaking, the obligation of the service charge or processing fee could also be considered an obligation in addition to the obligation for the filing fee.
No, but
I don't believe the appellate division was very clear on that.
The APTIV is saying, as I understand it, the obligation is to pay the filing fee, and the rest of that statute owed to or collected by, when credit cards, debit cards, or electronic funds transfer are utilized. The collect service charges refer to that. The obligation is the fee.
Yes.
And the service charges are the credit card, the bank fees. That's what they're saying. That's their interpretation. Why is that a crazy interpretation?
It's not a crazy interpretation, but the problem with it is that, it more or less then ignores JEPA. Because first of all, there's no issue here with credit card payment.
That is JEPA, the statute that we're talking about.
Yes, Title 40A5-43-47.
Yeah, so I was just looking at 46. That's part of JEPA, yes?
Yes, so I believe what that chapter is saying is that this service charge is in addition to the obligation. In other words, it is not adding to the obligation in any way. Again, it's not another fee pursuant to Title 22A or pursuant to Title 46, but it's a service charge above and beyond the obligation itself, which, I agree with Your Honor, would be the actual filing fees.
If we accept your argument, what limit is there on a county to assess service charge? Already, Essex County is charging three, other counties two. Why not six, seven, $10? What limiting principle would there be?
Well, Your Honor, I think that's why this case may be is the ideal one for this court to offer guidance as to what would be an acceptable convenience fee.
Well, you're really asking
us to give. In other words,
there
probably should be uniformity amongst all the recording officers. That I would concede. And
isn't that what the legislature intended when they provided a list of permitted fees for electronic access to filed documents? That's precisely what the legislature was trying to do by giving that exhaustive but exclusive list, is it not?
In terms of JEPA?
No. JEPA is a separate statute.
Yes.
JEPA was designed and said by the legislature at the time to allow local units to recover service fees that might be charged to them by the use of credit card issuers. You're arguing for an expansive look at use of JEPA to fill a gap that you perceive that the legislature left in the list of scheduled fees for electronically filed recording documents. And that's what the Appellate Division didn't agree with. Didn't agree with your meshing of two very distinct statutes to permit a fee that does not appear authorized by the legislature. Do you agree?
Well, Your Honor, I agree that that's the position that that's the decision of the Appellate Division, yes, which I of course respect. But again, I think it failed to realize, going back to the fact that we're not talking about the electronic filing of documents. We're talking about electronic receipt-based transaction, which is exactly what JEPA addresses. Again,
JEPA, when I look at the NJAC 5:30-9.9, which identifies permitted surcharges or convenience fees, A clearly is defining such fees to cover the costs of the electronic receipt transaction with the carrier. Is it not?
Well, Your Honor, that's where we would dispute that, because we're saying that here the electronic transaction is actually it emanates from the portal itself, and it goes straight, and you have a bank-to-bank transfer because the register has the checking business account of the submitter, and that's simply when the submitter files the document, the money is automatically taken from the bank account. So we have a bank-to-bank transfer, which we're saying does meet the definition of JEPA.
Maybe I'm misunderstanding, but in your answer to some of the questioning from members of the court, it seems as if your client's assessment of what the permitted fee would include goes beyond recoupment of any surcharge or assessment from the credit card company. It's encompassing other portal expenses.
Absolutely, Your Honor. In fact, I would just like to point out that the register does not accept credit card payments for e-filing. It is strictly electronic receipt transactions. There's no credit cards. There are no debit cards.
So then how do you even get JEPA?
Because it's an electronic receipt-based transaction. That's also right within the statute and the regulations. It could be debit card, credit card, or electronic transfers.
One last question.
Yes.
Why is your solution not to go to the legislature and ask for an amendment to the statute where the legislature identified permitted fees to be charged associated with electronic access of recorded documents?
Well, Your Honor, to be very candid, I do not feel that it's really necessary to go to the legislature in light of the fact that we do have not only this mosaic, which I refer to, mosaic of statutes, JEPA, we have the regulations. You also have the regulations under, I believe it's 15.3, which allows for electronic processing, and with that regulation itself cross-references the JEPA regulations. So we have all these different regulations, and it's been our argument that with the modernization of facilities and with the advent of e-filing and e-receipt-based transactions, that it's really not necessary to go to the legislature in light of the legislation and the regulations that are already in place.
I understand your position.
Do you want to very briefly address your quantum merit argument?
Yes, Your Honor. Here, the County Register has provided a service which, at a cost, and the submitters who used it were aware of the fee, and they agreed to it. And we feel that it would be, well, the Register feels it would be unjust for now to disallow it. Based on the fact it's been provided, there was an expectation of payment, and the parties themselves expected that it would be paid. So for that reason,
if it's not authorized by the statute, how can you argue quantum merit? I just don't get that. If you weren't authorized to charge the fee in the first place, how do you come to us and say we want to, you should be paid on a quantum merit basis?
Well, Your Honor, I believe the cases that were cited by the appellate division that went to quantum merit dealt with unenforceable contracts. One was where the attorney had provided fees to the client, but the contract itself was unenforceable because I believe the attorney waited some 33 months before the contract was developed. And the court nonetheless held that the attorney was entitled to be reimbursed for his services pursuant to quantum merit.
No, if you're the state agency, if you are required to provide a service,
yes,
and you're not permitted by law to provide a convenience fee, it's unlawful for you to do that. I'm trying to figure out how do you get to argue or for this court to accept a quantum merit, the right to collect something that you were never authorized to receive in the first place.
Well, again, I think the argument would be that there is no reason to say that it would be unlawful to charge it, and that also takes us to the argument of Constantine, where if there is this gray area as whether or not JEPA would apply to the convenience fee in this situation, that it should be left to the determination of the Register whether or not to impose such a fee. So we also have that argument as well, and also I think in all fairness to the Register, if the court is inclined to invalidate the fee, then we would request that any relief that's afforded be made on a prospective basis only, because this court would be establishing a new rule of law, being that up until the appellate division established a new rule of law, since up until February 11th of 2019, the law pursuant to the law division in Hudson County Superior Court was that the convenience fee was in fact valid.
Anything else you'd like to add to your presentation?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Eastman.
If it pleases the court, I'd like to go through rather quickly how the system works with respect to recording documents and the charges and fees that one incurs when one does that, and then how the system is funded. I think that in that manner, one can understand that the so-called convenience fee in this matter can't be charged. First is the county clerk. The fees chargeable by a county clerk or a register are set by legislation, and those fees are strictly monitored so as to establish a legislatively authorized mandatory uniform fee structure across the state. So how do they accomplish that? So they accomplish it by having the statute 4626A6, and from now on I'll not refer to the statutes because it's in my brief, but I can at least refer to what they stand for, which is documents affecting title are filed in the county where the land is located. Such documents are filed with the recording officer, which in this case is the register of mortgages and deeds. And by statute, it provides that the fees of the county recording officer shall be the fees prescribed and fixed by title fees and costs. And since the statute says that the fees allowed to be charged by the county register shall be, it's part of the mandatory system of applicability of where the documents are recorded and how much the fees are that the one is charged. There's no statutory authorization for an additional fee. The fees allowed to be charged are the fees in 22A4-4.1, nor is there a generic or add-on provision that allows a register to add on or charge miscellaneous fees. The fee is not set by statute. The appellate division has held that it's unlawful to charge such a fee. That was the Dugan versus Camden case. There was good reason for the holding in Dugan. The legislature drafted a complex integrated system with two separate purposes: one, to provide for adequate funding for the clerk's office, and two, to establish uniform fees. The clerk's office is specifically regulated as to how to handle the fees and charges that they collect. The fees and charges, and that's pursuant to 22A4-4.1. They're accounted for on the 15th day of each month at the county treasurer. Then the funds are forthwith audited by the county auditor. And within 10 days of receipt, the county register or the county clerk is to receive back $2 of every fee generated for the recording and filing and canceling of a document in his office. And that's the important part. The structure is mandatory. The money within 15 days goes from the county clerk's office over to the treasurer. The Treasury Department has 10 days thereafter to return $2 of the fee back to the register or the clerk. Those return fees can only be used by the county register or the clerk for one purpose and one purpose only, and that's to upgrade and modernize the services provided by their office. The use of those fees are monitored by the Board of Chosen Freeholders, and if there's a dispute as to what the fees are to be used by between the freeholders on one hand and the county clerk on the other, or the register, the dispute goes to the assignment judge, who is the third and deciding vote, and decides how the fees are to be used. So they even thought of a way to manage disputes so as not to disrupt the recording system in the state. And I think it's a clever one, although it took me a while to get my head around what powers the judicial branch had to settle a difference with the executive branch, but be that as it may, that's the system that's established, and it's resolved by the assignment judge. So there's strict limitations on how the register's budget is financed. It's in two parts. One half is through taxes. The other half is through fees that have been collected. There's a cap on how much they can spend. There's a budget that is sent to the county freeholders, and the county freeholders pass on it. The legislative oversight that takes place on budgeting is such that in the statutory scheme, the legislature mandated that all recording officers accept documents in electronic form, and the Act provided additional funding to implement the recording. But the Act did not What the Act did was it provided a five-step, five-year program to recalibrate the fee on a statewide basis. And that's been found in 46:26C-3, where it sets forth the targets that the state should undertake in order to see if the fee is adequate within 2 years in Section A, within 3 years, 4 years, and five. The legislature has not yet completed that study. It charged the Division of Archives and Records Management with the duty to see to it.
Mr. Eastman,
yes.
Can I ask you a question about what specifically the legislature has authorized? If you look at Sections 46 and 44 together, they authorize charging for service charges, which includes processing charges or discount fees for the use of a credit card payment system or EFT system. What do processing charges cover?
Well, the processing charges cover two things. One is if the credit card is used, for example, there's the issuer that put together all the structure, the credit cards, the accountants, the scanning machines that one uses when one has a credit card charge. And the other part is the entity that takes the risk. So those two combined come up with the fee that's over and above the obligation that's incurred.
I'm sorry, I missed the end of what you said. I'm sorry, Chief.
So
the entity takes the risk?
There's a guarantee that someone takes the risk as to whether or not the person is going to pay the credit card charge. So,
thank you. Sorry.
So there's two pieces of that, and there's much negotiation, I understand, as to who gets what part of it. But
so your understanding is that the term processing charges is tied to credit card payments?
Well, it's related to electronic payments like credit cards and debit cards and ACH pushes, which have the same features, which is somebody takes the risk and somebody has the infrastructure.
If the county has to hire an additional full-time employee in order to do what's set out in the certification, to review, approve, verify, etc., and record, can that be treated as a processing charge?
No, I don't think so. I think that what you're talking about is review and see if it's eligible for recording is the recording piece. I think the financial piece is something that's different. It's like if you have a motor vehicle a ticket and you have to pay the $100 fine. Well, one wouldn't pay just $100. If you did, then the issuer bank would charge, say, 3% to the municipality, and the municipality would only have $97. So the charge must be allocated to each obligation. And usually, I found it's 2.5% to 3%.
Please go ahead.
There doesn't exist a need-based justification or a constitutional justification or a statutory justification for the implementation of an unauthorized fee. Point one is that the one justification that's pressed by the appellant is that it's simply necessary that the county couldn't meet all its obligations to provide an online document recording portal without charging a fee for same, or two, that the officer appointed under the Constitution is the county register as a constitutional officer, and that the office has some inherent power to assess fees without a legislative approval, and three, it was based on a cost-shifting statute, which is the cost-shifting statute that we have before us today. So there is no justification, no legal doctrine that supports a need-based but statutorily authorized implementation of a fee by the county register. It boils down to the fee was justified by simple economic need, and that can't be. Under Clark versus Degnan, the state enacted legislation which necessitated additional county expenditures in excess of the amount the county was allowed to raise in taxes. And in response to a seemingly contradictory legislative command, 16 counties sued the state of New Jersey demanding that the act increasing the county responsibilities be reconciled with the act limiting the increases. And the court said that the legislature could force the counties to expend less on other services by increasing the cost of state-mandated programs. And as a result, the counties found their positions untenable. They'd have to go to the legislature, and that's what we face here. The issuer of the reporter of mortgages and deeds has found that with the budget that was hammered out with the county freeholders, if there was a problem with the allocation of the monies that the chargeback, the $2 chargeback for upgrading and maintaining the computer system, there's still not enough money to run the office of the county clerk. And the only recourse that they have is if they can't convince the county freeholders to expend more money and find some way to do it under the cap, is to go to the legislature and increase the fees. Now, the legislature has done that twice in 1985 and 1989, has increased the recording fees. I think now they're $30 for the first page, and back then they were $15. And that's the reason for the five-year study, is to figure out how much money it should be increased or decreased that the legislation called for. An answer to the problem is not a increase in the amount of money that the clerk shall have by virtue of a fee that has no legislative basis.
Can the county charge a flat fee to recoup the cost for the use of a credit card or a bank transaction?
Yes.
I'm using credit cards because depending on what credit card you have, it has a different interest rate. Probably be pretty difficult for a county or a public entity to try to figure out in each instance, you know, what the interest rate is between American Express and MasterCard and so on. Go ahead.
Yes, I think that they can take it over a time period and take the average over a time period in order to come as closely as they can to the fee. My sense is that different banks compete for the business of the counties, and they help subsidize the amount of the credit card costs. It just depends on those types of factors as to how the amount of the charge is going to be.
If they can charge a credit card fee, how is that any different than any other electronic funds transfer arrangement? Their contention is that if they can charge a credit card fee, a convenience fee, how is that any different than charging a fee for the electronic funds transfer from the payer's account to the payee's account?
So long as it's the same as the credit card charge, I don't see where there's a problem. Where this is the problem is that it's the definition of obligation. It's because if I have a driving issue and have to pay $100, that's my obligation, and the credit card would be used for that obligation. But this is infrastructure. This is not for the payment of the issuing portion of the credit card or the processing portion of the credit card. It's just in order to establish infrastructure in order to keep the recording deeds and mortgages. And that gap never was addressed. It was ever meant to address.
Well, what characteristics differentiate infrastructure in this electronic world that we're in from what you're saying is not an acceptable basis for a fee from acceptable bases for the fees?
Well, it's the definition of obligation under the statute. It's the obligation of the maker in the sense of the person who violated the speeding statute versus the obligation of the state or the county in this instance in order to provide a recording system. And in under GEPA, it has no place, there is no no ability to charge fees for the obligation of providing a deed recording system.
So if the obligation is that of the payor, the filing party. That's recoverable.
Yes, it is recoverable.
But if the obligation is of the county to provide the infrastructure to do the electronic filing, it's not recoverable.
That's correct. Okay. I would agree with that.
Other questions, anyone?
What?
Anything you'd like to add?
Do I have to speak to Dr. Quantum Merrill?
By all means.
Okay. I think it doesn't apply to this case, obviously. The case that it brings up is the Sharkey Kelly case, where he was a lawyer that did land development work and did not have a sign. He wanted the fee based on the increase in value that he put to the project. He was fortunate in that the land value went up, and also he was successful in fending off the two lawsuits, one with a contract purchaser and one with a subsequent assignee. And at the end of the day, it was obvious there was an expectation of compensation for all that work that he did, the two suits by the contract purchaser and the assignee, and the development work that he did in order to get the highest and best value out of it. It took him 33 months, but that's when he went to get paid, he finally came to the conclusion that he should have had a retainer agreement that allowed him a percentage. But in this case, there is no expectation of compensation on the part of the county. When the county can't very well claim the county clerk's office that it expected to be paid when there's no legal basis for the payment of the monies itself.
Thank you. Okay. We'll take the matter under advisement.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. And we need a break.